episode of We Talk Comics on the Air and in Your Ear. I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo, joined by Brett.
Hello.
Brett, you are what? The chief defender of what?
The chief defender of the faith.
Damn straight. Keith, you're here, right?
I am.
And what are you, like some sort of cub?
I'm half reporter, half cub.
Half reporter, half cub, and your name starts with a what?
Okay.
Hey, so you're a cub. Okay. Oh. And then we have the man with no nickname. He is I can't even remember his real name. What's your name again?
I think it's Habib.
Habib. What?
Yeah. Oh, we need some color.
at least that's what my name tag says.
Isn't that the bad guy on Homeland?
All right, so we've got Habib, a.k.a. Chris, with us.
I've never seen that show. Is it a good show?
I'd say uneven. The first season is really awesome, and then it's a bit rough. Kind of comes and goes.
After. But Habib is always cool, right?
Habib Marwan, I believe, is the name of the bad guy, and he's very mysterious. Stays very, very mysterious for the first.
Is there a comic book of it?
I think there is actually.
Is it really?
I think it's on Titan.
Oh, cool! I think you're right.
Yeah, actually, I believe Nerd Block had an exclusive cover.
I need to look for this.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go.
Add to my shopping list. That's what usually happens when we do these shows.
Yeah, that's the problem with this show. That's why we took a break. All of us needed to save a little money. All right, so this episode is Brett's episode. So I believe it's called episode 154, Brett's second pick. Isn't that the title?
Brett's second pick? What do you mean?
Oh, you picked. This is your second time you've picked now in season two. So this is episode 154, Brett's second pick, isn't it?
That's a terrible, terrible title. The actual title is What's the Story? Morning Glories.
Well, sure, if you want to go something completely unoriginal, stupid. Brett, tell us about this episode.
Well, I thought that we would sit down and look at some Morning Glories because I thought that I had just started reading it and I was enjoying it, but I thought there was some interesting elements to it that I kind of wanted to bring up and discuss as a group. And I know that Keith has been a fan of it for a while, even getting his I'll say likeness in the book.
I just wish it was his face.
You can recognize from the tattoos though.
See, so actually, before we really get into it, which Are you in a trade that's actually out?
Yes, I am. My appearance would be in trade 9.
Trade 9, okay.
Yeah. Issue 45 of the series.
Okay, because I haven't gotten that far. I think I've only gotten to like 7 or 8. And so I keep thinking to myself, did I miss Keith? I know what you look like inside the comic book from you showing it all around for quite some time, but I don't remember. But it felt like, well,
I know when you were in a comic book, you showed it around forever. Oh, that's right.
Oh, I'm gonna burn. Oh.
And I'm still looking for Mo's gold face from the Green Lantern run. That was cannot great. Find that character anywhere in there.
Yes, you can.
He's totally there.
I do have that in Omnibus. I supported you guys by purchasing that in Omnibus.
There you go. Yeah. Now, more importantly, though, is the name of your character, Keith, that you played in Morning Glories, was what?
It was the name of my character was kept a secret, really. The character's not named in the issue. I suspect that's because they're holding it back for a spin-off series. he is a doctor that has upwards of 3 lines.
So the big question is
unnamed doctor.
He's referred to in the credits of the comic as unnamed doctor. He does deliver the amazing line, which anyone who knows the show knows my catchphrase is, "I wouldn't get your hopes up," which is one of the lines he delivers.
It is telling. I mean, like that has been the motto of our show for 5 months.
Pretty much. That is how we like to tell the listeners before they start.
It's just that
in every write up. Don't get your hopes up. You feel free to listen if you want, but don't get your hopes up.
As long as you're signed for the TV adaptation, I don't think you have to worry.
are you getting points on that spin-off deal there?
Well, I mean, once it goes to series, everyone support it because I won't appear until one scene in season 5. So
before you get your spin-off.
And then, yeah. Well, I can't talk about that until the ink's dry.
All right, Brett, it's your episode, so you steer the ship here.
All right. Well, I guess the first question that I would be interested, like, how much did everybody get through? Mo,
first three trades for me.
First three trades.
And I'm looking forward to the fourth trade. I probably could have powered through that yesterday or today, but I fear I would have been powering through it instead of being able to sit and enjoy it, which I was able to do in the other ones.
It's true, and there's enough in there that I think that it's probably for the best to actually try to enjoy it as opposed to, powering through it.
Exactly.
I hate this book because I just read it too quick. Keith, how many did you get through?
I got nearly to the end of the third trade, so I got to issue 17, and the third trade goes to 19.
And you've previously read how far?
I think I've read till maybe 5 or 6. And then I started piling.
Five or six in trades?
In trades. But then, I mean, at that point, they had started talking about number 50 was going to be the end of the big arc. So. And I'll come back to kind of why also while I kind of pause there.
Yeah, well, I kind of have to admit, as I was reading it, I was going, how long can they keep this going for? So, all right.
Yeah, Chris? And unfortunately, I'm bringing up the hindquarters. I've only read the first trade, and I did think about starting the second one, and then I realized that I would be just powering through for tonight. And I love this book. I love this first book way too much to do that. I have far too much respect for this comic book, which is shocking because I've never liked anything Nick Spencer has ever done before. So
wow, really?
I'm
a big Nick Spencer fan.
I've liked stuff. I just haven't loved stuff. Not like I'm really digging this book. It's like The Faculty, only good.
I can't think of another Spencer thing that I really like either, to be honest.
I love Bedlam. And I really like the
I liked the first 6 issues of Bedlam, and then it was and then I thought it was a train wreck after Riley left it. So it may just be that he may be one of those writers that needs a really good partner.
Well, but you know what? I maybe I shouldn't speak too much about it, but Riley left. I mean, he told me just largely because he didn't feel the collaborative nature was there. Nick kind of tends to dictate a little bit, he felt, and that was why he left. And I've heard that about him before. So I mean, the other thing that I really enjoyed was I liked his work during the Superior Spider-Man. He was writing the what was the other Spider-Man series?
Avenging.
Oh yeah, Avenging Spider-Man. Yeah.
And then Superior Spider-Man team up, of course.
Which I thought.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, I did enjoy those as well.
Here's the funny thing: is that because of you, I sat down to read Steve Rogers' Captain America number 2, and I opened it up and I'm like, it's Nick Spencer.
It is. He's been charming them on Twitter. He's bringing his A game as far as relations.
In fairness, number 2 explain, and I know this has nothing to do with Morning Glories, but okay. Number 2 explains every reason why Captain America, is supposedly a Hydra agent. And, it's equally as reasonable as anything that you would expect in comic books. And anybody that has a problem with that at this juncture is, you know, basically an idiot. So,
well, and I'd love to know more about his professionalism on Twitter. What's been going on? What's
he has not handled all of the criticism very well.
He's actually engaging in this.
He's been he's going further than engaging. He's doing a lot of. I don't want to deep dive into Twitter speak or. He's using quote tweet, which is a way of, instead of engaging with people directly, it's kind of the equivalent of raising your voice so the whole room hears your answer. So he's selecting people out of the crowd and then belittling them. But that basically, the way he does it makes everyone that is a fan of his, you know, then gang up on the people that he's singling out. So okay. it's a bit classless, basically. Like, I mean, not to say that being called an anti-Semite for a month would be joyful, which is what happened to him. So it's not like either side of this discussion is like, you know, pristine.
Well, and the thing is, when you read issue two, you realize completely, it's just like, Captain America isn't really an anti-Semite. He's not really a Hydra agent, you know, kind of thing.
But isn't that what we said last month, though? That, like, yes. When we talked about this, I mean, we talked about if you're going to do it, go hard, and that it resolves an issue two is the opposite of going hard.
But no, that's not, I mean, it's not true. Like he thinks he's a Hydra agent right now still.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's available. Should I tell you what actually happens?
Well, you can't now not.
Okay. Fair. Yeah, all right. Fair. Ahead, yeah. So anyways, what happens is you're aware that one of the cosmic cubes has become a little girl called Kobik.
So,
she, because the only person who's ever treated her nicely is the Red Skull. So she kind of thinks of the Red Skull as her father, and to make him happy and his glorious vision of Hydra, she is making other people believe that they have shared the same glorious vision of Hydra. So she went into Captain America's mind, flipped it around, and made him believe that he was a Hydra agent and doing good work for Hydra.
And that's all fine.
I hate when that happens.
That's all fine, but it plays against two things. One, that this was any kind of, you know, thing that wasn't a stunt. And two, that they've pushed hard that Hydra does not equal Nazis, and then to make the Red Skull the center of the story.
Yeah.
kind of plays counter to that. No, they're not really Nazis thing.
And we're going down a non morning glory story.
It's a rabbit
hole here. I almost called it a glory hole. And that,
but thank accident. Goodness it's still about comics. So there's
it is still no yeah,
and it ties in what we talked about last week.
Yeah, and I'm remembering something with John Byrne. And this is something. It was actually in one of his. One of his letter columns to back at Next Men back in the day, and somebody was complaining to him, and his response to them was, "I understand why you're so angry." And he went into this explanation where he had done an issue of Fantastic Four, I think it was, mm-hmm. where a character had an abortion,
miscarriage.
It was a miscarriage. Okay. I'm trying to remember the details, but it was something along the lines of the way the character handled it was somebody who had accused him of having a certain political belief due to how the story. And his response was, "I never once considered this my belief. I considered this the character's story." Mm-hmm. And so why was anybody accused Nick Spencer of being a Nazi just because he's telling a story? Why can't it just be a story? Why does it have to be personal? You're pushing your personal views. Like, it's that same idea of what John Byrne was saying, was he wasn't presenting something he was just telling the story, and that's that character's story. So, I mean, when I hear this, these people are accusing him of that because even if he did make him a Nazi, like, good God, like it's a comic book story. Let it play out, and don't assume that means the person's evil. Like, it's just ridiculous.
It's Twitter.
Oh,
That's fair.
That's pretty fair.
I think it's something that in today's just where we're at today as far as access to creators, but also where we're at with how we understand like messages in like subtext and work. A lot of people mistakenly relate those two things that if it's in a book, it must be the way they think. Every character must think the way that you as a writer, you as an individual thinks if you wrote them. So, of course it's horseshit, but, but you know, there's a lot of stupid people in the world that can't separate the two things.
Now, Keith, I'm concerned about this storyline in Captain America.
Okay.
Not ending the way it should because of the public backlash. Do you know if Nick Spencer writes ahead? Or is he going issue to issue?
I'm pretty sure he has the strength to, it seems to me like the type of guy who's going to go, screw you. And I'm really going to do what I want.
Well, no, I kind of like when a writer has at least the outline done before they finish, but all the attention, I hope it does not change the storyline. Because that very property. Rarely works.
It's a property, so it's not really his choice anyways.
I would say, I mean, any Marvel or DC book is generally 2 to 3 months lead time anyway. Marvel's probably going to relaunch everything as soon as Civil War II ends in October. So I wouldn't expect any change from what they were going to do, because it was probably going to be a 6 or 8 issue run anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but you know, I mean, at this point,
the state of Captain America is a little bit messy right now. So
at this point, they've already undone the. I mean, everyone only reacted to the headline from number one anyway. No one ever
read
the thing. And now then they can react for the headline of number two that says they undid it. I did have a laugh at the number of people who thought, then took credit for them undoing it. It's like, we wrote all these think pieces and we tweeted how much we were unhappy. And then 3 weeks later, they fixed it.
People know how comics work.
They retroactively wrote that comic.
I suspect they did 2 comics. One if people liked it and one if Twitter didn't like it. And then just published the second one.
That's right. Because that works too. Like a newspaper headline for when...
That's right. Dewey beats Truman, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Brett, are you looking forward to next week when we finally talk Morning Glories? Or
I was concerned that we weren't going to have enough Morning Glories talk to finish this
episode. Yeah, I was, and then I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, actually, probably could talk Morning Glories for a while. We won't have any time to talk Harveys.
So anyways, I started reading Morning Glories because I happened to find it on Hoopla. And so I was really happy because there was a whole bunch of trades there. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to sit down and try this first trade out. And so as I read the first trade, I thought, this is good. I like this. And then I got to the end and I'm like, you know, because almost every one of them has a cliffhanger. And so it's kind of like, I'm not sure. Did I like this book? Did I, you know, am I just okay with it? But I thought, oh, I'm going to read on to number two. And then pretty much by the end of number two, I was completely hooked, you know, and then I just kept on reading through everything that was on Hoopla. So wherever that is, 7 or something like that, 7 or 8 maybe. So what did everybody else think? Like, I do think it's a really good show, or a really good show. I mean, it's broken down into seasons in that regard, I guess, but
I mentioned this before. I had there was a sale on Comixology, probably, I mean, it must have been a year, maybe 2 years ago, probably a year ago. I ended up with the first, probably because I ended up with the first 7 trades because Keith had recommended the book so highly. And I genuinely do trust and appreciate Keith's recommendations, and nobody agrees on every book, but I generally will trust what he'll say. And so I bought it knowing it would be a good read, and I hadn't gotten around to it. I got on Comixology and, you know, Dark Horse Digital, and then physical, like thousands of books to read. So forgetting, and that's the problem with digital more than anything, you don't see it, so it's not staring at you on your shelf. You forget to read it.
Like, you forget you even bought it.
So oh, when man, I looked at my unread books the other day. Over yeah. 1,000.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. Well, I'm the same. And so when Brett brought this up and said, this is the, you know, this is what we're going to do. And I looked and I saw I had the first 7 volumes. I was ecstatic. And like I say, I got the first 3. You know how I describe this book, Brett? You're talking about how there's always that hook. I see this as, this is to me, it's a very much, it has that, it has the same appeal as Game of Thrones in that there's a lot of characters. There's a lot of mysteries. There's a lot of plots. And you only get a little bit at a time of that character's mystery, not enough to ever solve the mystery, but enough to keep you intrigued and keep you going forward and going, what's the next story for them? And you might not, like, there's characters in this that are introduced that you see in like issue 8 that you don't see again. I don't see again for and by the end of the 3rd, you know, they have one issue or they show up once or twice. And you might not see them for like 2 years, which is again, very Game of Thrones, but that's, like, it's a completely different story, but that storytelling style, I that's what I really took out of it, was there's just a little bit of this character, a little bit of his story, and a little bit of his history, and this moves forward, and it doesn't really get anywhere, but it just moves forward just enough that I never forget it, and I'm always intrigued.
Well, my favorite books usually you feature that same kind of storytelling device where you just get to that point of near climax with one character, and then you jump on to the next, and then you just kind of keep cycling through, and everybody gets a little bit of time, and it doesn't give you any time to get bored. It just keeps making you want to read further and further, just so that you can always tell what like, you may only have like 2 or 3 favorite characters out of like 7. But to keep getting to those 2 or 3 favorite characters, you're more than willing to keep reading, you know, all of them.
Well, and that's the thing is that when there's a cliffhanger at the end of an issue, I know going to the next issue, I'm not going to get that cliffhanger resolved because I'm not going to get back to it for 2 or 3 issues. But in that time, I'm going to have another cliffhanger that intrigues me. And by the time I get to the cliffhanger that I get and it gets resolved, there'll be another one that I know is going to come. So it's just that, it's that carrot on a stick type storytelling. And it's really difficult to do. I can only imagine Nick Spencer really had this thought out and plotted out for, since he was a kid or something, like for years. Like, it's just so, it's such a tapestry of stories and like I say, characters and plots. That's really what's is very impressive to me.
Keith, Chris, anything to add?
Yeah. Well, I guess I like most had, and thanks for saying nice things about my opinions, Mo. I had gotten into this book.
You're an asshole person.
Well, that's fair. I'm okay with that. I like celebrating the work I like. I don't care if people like me personally. I got into this book. I can't remember. I think I got the trade for cheap. Honestly, I think it was that I pulled the first trade out of a $5 bin or something. And it's funny. We had a discussion on we've got a shared WhatsApp kind of running thing that we talk about show notes and get ourselves organized as much as we ever are organized. And I had mentioned that I was finding it that I found the reading kind of dense. And then we had this long back and forth about Mo had read tons in the weekend and so on. So Chris was struggling with the first book. I thought more about like what I found harder to, like, not harder, but was taking longer. And it's something that I've now found in every time I read Roaring Glories. And the reason I've only made it 5 is that whenever a new trade comes out, I want to go back and start at the beginning again to read the whole thing. And I found that the first book took a long time to read, the second one less, and the third one I'm flying through. Because with a bit of pace to it, I'm not doing the, okay, who's that guy?
Oh, what's that's doing again? Yes.
And okay, that guy looks sort of like that guy. So is this the other guy? Or is, I really enjoy Joe Eisma's work in this book. But he's not a detail. He's not like a 1,000 lines in a face. He's like an 8 lines in a face kind of guy. So there are occasions where I'm not, I get 2 characters that look similar mixed up. By the third book, there's a pair of twins in the book. So, yeah, what the fuck?
Jesus Christ, no. Oh, no.
Well, I do want to touch on Joe Eisma's art. So,
I think we will, yeah. But
I just want to get... Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, and I understand that. I mean, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, this book never once uses first-person narration captions. No. It doesn't have thought balloons, and it has a lot of action sequences. But this is what I was talking about this, I think it was last week, or perhaps the week before, where a book where not much happens. Like, this is a book where a character can have their head down, and another character can be staring at them, and then they can look at the up at them and just have tears in their eyes. And it's like, there's no words there, but there's something that makes you not read it quickly. Like, you take in that moment, and there's a lot of those quiet moments. And so it's like, it's not dense in that it's not overly written with tons of dialogue on a page or word captions but it is a book that you absorb. So in that way, I understand what you mean. It's not a quick read. Like, you're blowing past it because nothing's going on and you're not interested. You get involved in the world.
Actually, I'd make a comparison to Five Weapons, a very similar book in some ways.
I had that thought too.
I agree. There's not a lot there, but it's not a quick read. You just sort of enjoy it panel by panel. I would like to say I wasn't struggling with any of the words. I was just struggling with time last week.
No, that's fair.
You were reading some Hickman, and that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We got to talk about Hickman someday. Oh my god.
You know, two people are fans on this podcast, and two aren't.
And that will definitely exceed the homework.
yes.
One issue would exceed the homework.
we've capped the homework for the show so that we can keep this going weekly, and that's not going to work. I tried to read Secret Wars at number zero, and I'm only about halfway through it. I'll be honest. I've started it in May.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mo. I mean, there's so much expression in the characters, and it's. Unlike a lot of books, it has the guts to not put any words in for scenes. Like, there's one stretch where it's two pages, four panels on each page, that is just two characters looking back and forth at each other in an awkward moment, and there's three words or something said on the entire two page spread. It does have the guts to have quiet moments, and let characters just be.
And you know what? And the funny thing is that we talk about Joe Eisma, and it's like, I'm not totally pleased with the look of this book. That's the funny thing is, I don't love the look of this book. I don't love the visual look of this book, but I can say that it suits the story being told. So like, I have, you talk about getting lost in the character. There's a character in this who's East Indian, and it wasn't until they mentioned they're East Indian it would have ever occurred to me they were East Indian, because their skin tone is the exact same as every other character. And the color palette in this thing is completely bland, and all the characters have the exact same skin tone, and there's no colors. Like, the backgrounds, they're all just kind of gray or brown, and I don't love the look of it, but it's the pacing of the way it's told suits the story so well that even though I'm not like, oh, I love the art, I'm more like, I'm drawn into the world that's created. Like, it's a weird thing where I don't love the art and I don't love the look, but I wouldn't want somebody else working on it.
But don't you think the colors actually add to the fact that this is a place they want to get out of?
Nope.
No, so I think the real world doesn't look that much different.
No, I enjoyed how bland their world was, and they wanted to get back out into the world, out of this almost living hell.
But the thing is, there's portions where it shows them outside that world, and it's the same thing. So that's why.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Yeah, the first five pages, I guess. But yeah.
Well, late. Read a little more, Chris.
Yes, there is a fair bit more. You know, and this is one of the reasons why I did want to bring it up, because when after I read the first trade, like, Joe Eisma was one of those reasons when I looked at this and I'm like, oh man, he's not a very good artist. I mean, he's got no detail. I can't tell who the characters are. He's got no backgrounds to speak of. He's lazy because all he the does
characters,
have
almost all the female characters have the exact same anatomy. There's a portion in this. There's one character in this who's the characters are 16 years old when they go to the school. There's a character in this when she's an adult, and she's the character's like a foot taller. This female, I'm like, females don't grow a foot in 10 years when they're 16. Like that's the type of stuff where I'm like, that's bad art. And yet somehow I don't want a different artist on it.
But you know, and when I looked, like it was one of those cases because, like, I thought he was really lazy because on those panels where he's got somebody looking, where like two characters looking at each other, I mean, he's basically just copying the panel from, you know, from one corner to the bottom corner because it's the exact same look, or maybe it's something that's ever so slightly different. So I mean, he's doing a lot of stuff like that, but then the more that I read it, and it wasn't that I really started to figure out which characters were which that much more, because that's just never going to happen, I don't think. But I realized that the expressions that he does do, the fact that he's still doing the pencils and the coloring, like all the art on the interior, within the time frame, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, that's pretty good. So I kind of started to look at him with different eyes as I was reading the series more. And you're right. I can't imagine the book with somebody else on it.
It really goes to show that, like, we talk about people with details and some of the, you know, my favorite artists of all time. But understanding pacing and storytelling is more than just being able to draw beautifully. And I think he does that very well.
Well, some of his work reminds me of Terry Moore. You know, just in the facial expressions and the body language and stuff like that. This is
But if it was Terry Moore, I wouldn't be able to. Well, I wouldn't be able to do anything after because there's a lot of girls in school uniforms in this.
Yeah, don't read that one at work, eh?
And Terry Moore added to the mix just might be too much. Maybe some Frank Cho art in there too.
Frank Cho's Morning Glories would be a radically different book. Yes. And we would be stopped at the border for reading it.
And there would be, I would be waiting for the talking dinosaurs or something.
Wait. You're suggesting, and we might get that if we get a little further. Who knows the way this thing goes? that's the other thing is, yeah, I mean, I was going to go somewhere else. Just mention, I can't imagine Frank Cho sexualizing a teenage girl, but in drawings. But he would never do that. But
never.
But no, no. But that's the other thing is you don't know what this book like is it, especially early on. You're like, is it just like a cult thing going on here with this school? Is it? And then you start to get kind of, I don't know how, is it science fiction? Like, I don't know, even know what genre would you even classify this as? There's mysteries. There seems to be elements of science fiction. There's horror elements. There's all sorts of stuff going on there.
Oh yeah. Well, Wikipedia listed as mystery, drama, and adventure. And I'm like, yeah, it's got those things, but it also has science fiction and horror. Like you say, I mean, there's people sitting there or people hanging with their guts out and stuff like that. You know, I mean, there are horror
time travel.
They classify it on the back of the book as a thriller is what they call it.
Right.
It's that though.
Actually, it almost has a board game element to it as well. I could easily see playing. I had loved moving my pieces through this thing, trying to escape the clutches of the evil faculty.
Something like that. Like,
I mean, what would be crazy about this book is like if you gave someone volume one to read, and then gave them the solicit copy for volume five, they would never believe it was the same book.
No.
And you know, five to seven would probably be the same. Like it changes so radically, and yeah, it does. Like it does go from horror to supernatural to sci-fi all over the place. As far as like, because you don't at the point we're at, you don't know what this whole place is about. My understanding is that by volume 10, you still don't know what the whole place is about, though.
So then
it all turns in number. So then, like, volume 5, it all sorts out, and then smooth sailing.
So then it's Twin Peaks, basically.
Yeah, it's Degrassi Junior High meets Lost.
Well, it's funny that we're making all these comparisons to TV. That was one of the things I was thinking as I was reading it. This book is written in a way that it would be so easily adaptable to a television series.
I wanted to bring that up too. I mean, to me, I'm like, how is this property not, like, you couldn't do this in a movie. It's impossible. It would have to be in a HBO or AMC, something like that, like getting a hold of this. And then for years, you know, unraveling it, like I say, like a Game of Thrones or this type of thing, like, and maybe you could make a video game out of it or something like that, like Chris says, and trying to do. I actually think you could and do some sort of episodic thing like that too. But yeah,
actually, I would love a BBC series because the budget isn't really necessary for this. At least as far as I've read.
Oh, no. You got to read more, Chris. You're the one who's only read. Then a budget would be necessary. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah, I mean, there are elements that if you had a lower budget, it would definitely come off a lot worse. And it's the kind of thing that some of the things that they do, especially when you get into time travel and that kind of thing, and some of that supernatural element, if you failed at that, then I think it would be very easy to drive somebody who was just a casual viewer away.
Yeah, in fairness, okay,
the last few pages now make sense.
Chris hasn't read volume 3 that has the alien armada in it.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. At what point do they actually explain...
You're such an asshole. You're such an
asshole. At what point do they actually explain the name Morning Glories? Other than it's the name of the academy.
Who cares?
I haven't read that yet.
Okay, I thought maybe it's a clue to something.
Well, they're students at Morning Glory Academy, so I guess they would be
Morning Glories. Yes.
Oh no, I just thought there would be a broader meaning.
Well, as Brett started the show with, what's the story with Morning Glories?
Okay. Well, perhaps it ties into the flower. I don't know. It could.
We could pause the show and do some research on the flower symbol.
Yeah, that's right.
Use in other classic works. I mean, there are literary allusions in this book.
Perhaps Morning Glories have some sort of like deadly secret as a flower. I don't know.
But just to go back to it, does anybody know has this property ever been? Everything gets picked up. Like you can do a book for, you know, butt fuck publishing out of Tutankhamun in the I can't even know what I'm saying.
Hey, the L Ray Network has optioned Mo's imaginary comic show already.
Yes, like
from Buttfuck Comics.
Just between when he mentioned it and now. They picked it up for 6 episodes.
It can be, yeah, you could be publishing it on the moon somewhere, and that's the only place you can pick it up, and somebody in Hollywood will find a copy and you know, contact you and just see if anybody else has contacted you yet. Like, they're so worried about missing out on that next big thing, you know? Is there no word that this is going to be turned into something else? Because the story deserves to be seen by more people. And you know, it's one of those things where I talked about in the Transformers. I'm like, does anybody know, is there anything first, and then I have another question.
It's not in on the wiki page.
Okay. I like, the other thing about this is if you don't start at volume 1, you're screwed.
Absolutely.
Like, you are screwed. Like, we talk about, like, we've been reading a lot of things where it's like, hey, we're reading issue 57 of this book, or we're, you know, we're reviewing issue 3. Like, if you tried that with this, you're done. Oh,
if we read, like, issue 22...
Like, this is the worst book ever.
Right in the middle, yes, we would absolutely hate the book, bar none. The art would be awful, the writing would be stupid, and the characters would be pointless. And absolutely.
Nothing would happen in it.
Nothing at all, no. But when you read that in context, it's like, oh, wow, this is great.
And but that's it. I mean, I complain about that, and I don't think that. And you know what? It's, again, when you're doing a property book, or you're doing like a superhero monthly book, and it's property book, it doesn't make sense to do it like that. This is the advantage, I guess, of independently publishing this. This is Shadowline through Image, and so I mean, him doing this for his own storyline, it's okay. But like I say, you mean good luck if you got to start at volume one. But I was always like, how do you grow your sales then? And I guess you grow it by doing a great issue and selling those trades and people going back and reading them, catching up, and then continue reading them and just keep going and going and going, because the quality is good and the word of mouth is good. I guess that's the only way, because otherwise I'm like, how? Because if somebody just tries like an issue of this, you're never going to get a second issue.
I had a laugh. I did a global search of Twitter for the phrase Morning Glories to see what people said about the comic. And I found this series of tweets from a person. It was four tweets, like spread over 2 hours. A couple weeks ago. And the first one said, okay, I'm finally trying Morning Glories because so many people have recommended it. Oh my God, Morning Glories is so good. Okay, so now I collect Morning Glories.
Yeah, actually, he's had Nick Spencer has had a really interesting way to promote his book, because I actually, the way I got volume one is I followed him on Twitter. And he just put out a tweet with his book free on Comixology.
Yeah, I got it free from Image Comics, Volume 1, from their website, just as a free download. And I can't say how I got it, but it was... but yeah, like he's definitely done a good job of attempting to get it into the hands of new readers.
You know, you know, another thing that I really appreciate about this book, and get to the characters a little bit here, is we talk about these are 16-year-olds who go to this school, but they're exceptional 16-year-olds. They're highly bright. They have hidden talents and abilities, and yet, despite that, like, this is the problem that often is happens when you get somebody who's like extremely bright and they're a teenager, they feel like an adult though, but I never felt like I wasn't reading a teenager. They still, to me, feel like, talk like, have the anxiety of a teenager. So yeah, they're talented and they're bright, but they still feel very organic to their age and their being and their experiences.
Actually, it sort of reminds me of Ender's Game in that way. Mm. That these are smart people and they're doing smart things, but the sense of youth is still there.
Well, and they all do have their own abilities. And of course, I mean, that's part of the reason that they're together in that way, is because of their different abilities. But, you know, but they're not necessarily, like, it's interesting because they're not all good people.
No.
But at the same time, they have positive, and all of them have positives and negatives. I can't look at anybody, like, I look at even the worst people in this book, and at some points, I like reading about them. I still like them.
Well, they're very well-rounded, and another thing is, when a character in this book does something very, very bad, you don't ever 100% know if that's because they're having their strings pulled in a way that they are or aren't responsible. So you never really blame the character even for doing something horrible, like in some ways, you know, because they have a background that may have explained it, or because there's these evil people in the school who may be manipulating them, or they're being controlled in some, like, all this stuff going on where I'm like, I could easily give up on this character in another book, but here I don't want to.
No, that's absolutely right. And again, this is one of those books where, and now I am upset because I started reading it and it's not done, because just like Keith, I'm like, you know, I can't read it anymore on Hoopla right now. And I don't know that there's that many other volumes out even. So it's like, oh, should I just wait? Should I just, you know, keep reading and read the next couple of trades that I haven't read yet? I don't know what to do.
Okay, I'm just probing to try to get some spoilers for myself here. But does the October 10th thing ever come up again?
October 10th?
The birthday.
Oh, it's May the 4th.
May 4th.
It's May 4th.
How can you get that through? May the 4th.
And of course, Keith.
Can't tell me he didn't choose that on purpose.
Keith should know that as well.
Yeah, like all of the incredibly amazing kids in the Morning Glories Academy, my birthday is also May the 4th.
You know what? I know where why I made my mistake. There was one character who just claims
yes.
he picked her birthday, and that was yes. October 10th.
She chose.
So I didn't just pull 10, that 10. Out of the air. It was in the book. Because I mean, once again, literally, there's an allusion here that I mean, I'm thinking Village of the Dam now that they share, and that would be a weird twist.
Thus far not explained, but it does come up. It does recur as a plot point.
It definitely does. Yeah.
Like it's because I mean one of the challenges of reading this book, as well as keeping the incredibly large cast of characters straight, is that it jumps around in time and place so much. You get two pages of this person's history, and then two issues later you get one more page of their history. So it is kind of, and then as you get into the third book, you start out getting whole pages that repeat. Because because they're coming, they're entering and exiting from one character's point of view. It's a lot to keep straight in your head.
You need to, what is it they call it, like a roadmap? Like you need to draw, I need chart. A chart.
Making notes.
Maybe that's it. I mean, maybe it's as much as I've enjoyed those first three, and there's that point where I'm like, okay, the ending of three is quite a hook, and I'm ready to start number four. Maybe I should just wait till it wraps up, because I'm just going to otherwise be frustrated waiting for it to wrap up anyways. And by the time it does, I'll need to start over.
Yes,
and maybe
yes.
That's where Keith got to too.
I know.
Well, it doesn't end at 50, but 50 is what they're calling the end of season two. Maybe it's 25 that they called season one. I'm not sure if it's that exact. It is. Is it 25? I'm pretty sure. So number 50 actually. As you're listening to this, we are 1 week away from number 50 finally coming out. It has been delayed a couple of times. It's finally due out in mid-July. So number 50 is the wrap up of the second season. So you're actually in a really good. It's why I was happy that Brett picked this, because I was intending to get back and to do a whole reread of it, like leading up to reading number 50, because there is a goodly chunk that I haven't read at all. So.
You know what? I have those first seven volumes, and then I have issue 38 for some reason. I don't know why.
We buy these. We buy all these weird bundles and the sample issues and everything. And like, Image is known for putting surprise, like secret free ones up, all over the place on Comixology that sometimes come and go as well. I end up with all these loose issues of all kinds of books.
So who are your you guys have read more? Actually, maybe I don't want to know who your favorite character and least favorite character is. I was gonna, but I don't know.
It's interesting because like Casey is really important, and you know there's a point where her storyline really really breaks off a little bit, and that's actually another one of those moments where you're just kind of like, you know, your mind is almost blown because we're back in time, we're dealing with stuff, and she changes her hair color for it, and so it's like, oh no, she looks different from I was used to what she looked like, now she looks different, and it's just like, oh, she's so weak now, you know.
For me, Hunter and Jade are my favorite characters.
Jade is very cool, and you can tell that just by reading the first one, you can tell that she's so important to the storyline. Well, you believe that she's so important to the storyline because you know. I think you have that moment where it's just like, oh, this person's so totally important, and oh. Well, I guess they're not.
And then you get to this point where you're like, no, this person's not important at all. And then you get to this point where, oh, wait, no, they are.
Yeah.
Being as I'm so early in, I'm not willing to trust any of these fucks yet.
Well, and that's it, though, right? You know, it's...
And that's it. There's other characters that will be, like, introduced. Like I said, there's a character who was introduced at a whole issue for them in, like, issue 8 or something like that that I haven't seen since, and I'm on issue 15 now or whatever. And I'm like, I think I might have liked that character.
I mean, that's another one of the things that I like about this, though, is because it had the balls to have that second trade paperback, which was basically just all single issues devoted to kind of bringing the backstory from each of those characters. But it still had enough in it to progress the storyline along.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It really is. And obviously we're all, you know, talking about it in good ways. And I do hope people check it out. I just don't know when or how they should. But yeah, like I said, I don't know of a book where I could sit there and more savagely just destroy the look of a book and yet don't want to because I like it too much. Like, I like the look even too much. Like, as much as I don't like it, I like it. And it's just, it's weird. It's a book you have to experience for yourself, because I think everybody will have a similar and yet different experience at the same time.
But you also have to be willing to give it more even than just the first trade paperback. I mean, because I think that if you can get through the first two, you're probably likely to be hooked for the rest of it.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I think you're right in that the first one, you're like, this is really high quality. But if you stopped right there, you wouldn't know that you're missing out on something, like you are.
Mm-hmm. No, but once you hit number two, you start getting the backstories of the characters. You start, you know, filling in a small amount of the pieces. And that's when they get you. Because if you don't like the characters after you've read all about them, then, well, you're probably just not going to like the book, period. So you might as well stop.
So for those people those lost Degrassi High Game of Thrones fans who've been looking for something that combines all of it, there you go.
There you go. That's the first and last time Degrassi High and Lost are ever getting, mentioned in the same.
I kind of hope there's a crossover episode between Degrassi and King of Thrones. It could happen.
Yeah. If they did have it with King of Thrones, I would be really impressed.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. There is a Game of Thrones comic. Is there a Degrassi comic? Why has that never been a thing?
There was a couple volumes of manga.
I'm starting a letter writing campaign.
Yeah. Is there a manga? Chris, did you say there was something?
There was a manga.
Really?
Yeah, a big, thick book, Young Readers.
Interesting.
Well, I believe that was, but that was with the original Next Generation incarnation.
Oh, okay.
Right now, the Netflix version, I can't say, has anything.
Oh, yes, I see. It's called Extra Credit.
Interesting.
Everything has a comic.
All right, spending more freaking money as I... there are tons of ways that folks can read these for basically free, though, for at least the first couple of volumes. So we should probably plug those. If you have Comixology Unlimited, volumes 1 and 2 are on there as part of the Unlimited package right now.
But not in Canada.
You cannot get Comixology Unlimited in Canada. If you have the Hoopla app, which is available through some libraries, Brett, how many did you say are on there?
I believe there's 8.
Okay. Mo, did you look on Scribe?
If you have access to my Comixology account,
and we'll give that code out at the end of the show.
You have 7. No,
I unfortunately did not look on Scribe, it's the type of thing on Scribe that probably has a first, like, image. They generally tend to have a first, maybe a second volume, but not more. Yeah.
I think if there's 2 volumes, though, that gives you more than enough. And then you should start paying for the damn thing to support this amazing book.
Well, and it's interesting because the first 4 trades are such a large volume. Like, because the first 4 trades cover that first season through 25 issues, and because Truants is the last of that first season, and then
now I gotta read
it's my fourth trade tonight now.
Make it at least four. Yeah, make it to the fourth trade.
And then afterwards, they actually get to be more. They suddenly start becoming four or five issue.
Because there's great value. Like that third one is 214 pages, and the first trade is cheap, and I think it's like 180 pages. The second one was a little smaller, but really good value.
Fourth volume's also over 200 pages.
Yeah. By the time you get like to 8 and 9, then you're near to 100 pages, and so the it's not quite the same. But then again, I mean, you know, by that point you're totally hooked.
So Brett, I don't know, if we probably don't have a lot of time left, because Keith, you wanted to talk about Harveys, and there's the horn.
I'm okay now talking about the Harveys. It was I thought it was funny when the Harvey Awards came out today. The Harvey Award nominations came out, and so the Harveys, unlike basically every other award show, like comic awards, are an open nomination for any pro, and they're an open vote. So usually there's like a committee that makes the nomination list, and then it's open. This one, the nominations are also open. But one company really seemed to have mobilized their base. So no one did anything wrong. I'm not saying anyone did anything wrong. One company just was really successful at getting all their freelancers, all their editors, all their letterers to put in their nominations. So congratulations to Valiant Comics on 50 Harvey Award nominations, including 4 of the 6 single issues, 4 of the 9 best series, 5 of the 9 best cover,
wow.
4 of 4 of best domestic reprint.
And
Mo, I know you love your Valiant humor books. Congratulations on getting 5 of the 6 nominations for the for the Harvey for best humor book.
Wow.
No, I'm pissed off they didn't get more. These guys are great, and this is finally what they deserved. I think they're probably voted against. I think there's a conspiracy. Otherwise, they would have had all of the nominations.
They would have had definitely all the humor ones.
Yes. Yeah,
well, next year, Faith qualifies. So I'm expecting Faith to be nominated for every slot in every category. Just Faith, 100% of the Harvey nominations.
I don't know. I do love my Valiant, and I think they do a great job. But that Bloodshot 4001 or whatever, there's a review site. I can't remember the name of it, but it's like an aggregate review site. Huh. And man, the average reviews for that book were like 8.8 out of 10, and I'm like, what the hell? That book blew.
They really know how to game the system.
Yeah. I think they do.
Ouch.
Excuse me.
I put it far away from the.
I love that you have a small child in your house and you do that.
It's not loud here.
Okay, so we're on a bunch of stuff. I'm not even going to bother mentioning it. We're OUT, except for before we go out on this one, you find us at the different places you find us. I shouldn't have to do the work for you. Use Google, folks. Like, go find us individually, or as a group, whatever. I don't care.
Looking for Morning Glories, then look for us, too.
I'm Habib _ We Talk on Twitter.
And it's time to announce next week's topic. Keith, you are week's topic. It's your turn. What are we going to be discussing next week for the hosts and the fine listeners?
In case they want to participate. I'm going to plug one quick thing. Our pal Ryan Ferrier, check him out on Twitter, because he posted a new 13-page Tiger Lawyer story today.
Ooh.
13 pages of Tiger Lawyer. That's what all the guys are going to be doing as soon as this episode wraps.
Yep. I'm not waiting until this is over, man.
Chris is already gone.
You need Habib.
All right. For coming next week, and we talk a lot about serialized storytelling. We talk a lot about entry points and how to hook someone for a next issue. something we have never talked about in 154 episodes of the show is what I want to bring to the episode next week. So I will send out homework for you guys. I have picked three random episodes of 1940s comic book movie serials for us to watch. Only three episodes. I picked three random ones from three different serials, and we'll watch those and then come back to talk about that form of storytelling that has so influenced comics.
So we can only watch the three you choose.
I kind of like that, yes.
Okay.
I think that's pretty cool. I like that. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So should I tell you the ones that I've already seen all of them? Or
you won't have seen them between now and next week. So so yes, for now, stick to just the three episodes that I send you out. I made a YouTube list.
I've seen everything.
What I can also do, yeah, I think I've seen at least one of them, but 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, yeah.
So, I'd like to request something really racist.
So we'll save
and avoid
when
it
when we do the Fleischer Supermans. There's one that they don't even usually put on the box sets because
yeah, that's true. I know the one. Yes.
Well, maybe I can also put that that playlist in the show notes for this, so anyone who wants to can prep and do the same kind of same prep for next week's episode.
Sounds good. And Chris, you speaking of serialized. I don't know, older superheroes or whatever, Superman, Lois Lane, you had a little something you wanted to throw out there?
I just wanted to say we lost Noelle Neal, the first radio show, Lois Lane. She was also on the George Reeves television series and voiced Lois Lane for the Adventures of Superman cartoon. In the 70s, huge in really developing Lois Lane into a person rather than just a caricature. Just the world is smaller, and she's the first Lois Lane we've ever lost. So, yeah, that's a sad thing, and I just wanted to give her a little shout out.
All right, good stuff. Anybody, anything else? Or are we ready to get the hell out of here?
I think we're ready to get the hell out.
Night, everyone.